Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Dr. Lovato Levels. She is a 30-year-plus veteran educator in which she has been an elementary teacher, assistant principal, principal, bilingual specialist, director, assistant superintendent, and superintendent. Currently, Dr. Levels is a student conduct officer for a local university in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. In addition, she was a university field supervisor, providing instructional guidance for student teachers, all while she continues as a chief executive officer of Higher Levels Educational Group, adjunct professor, author, advocate, and executive mentor. As the CEO, Dr. Levels provides professional development and executive mentoring throughout the country. Dr. Levels has served many professional and civic organizations, including delegate to the Texas Democratic Convention, representing Senate District 23, DeSoto Chamber of Commerce Board, Leadership Southwest Board, Big Brothers, Big Sisters Southern Region Board, University of North Texas Texas Board, University of North Texas Advisory Council, and the University of North Texas Black Alumni Network Board. She was most recently appointed by the Dallas County Commissioner, John Wiley Price, to the Dallas County Elections Committee and was elected as the Dallas County number 3101 precinct chair. Her passion for education and her community is evidenced by her work with the Our Voice, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the Texas Association of School Administrators, National Council of Negro Women, Parent Teacher Association, the Texas Association of Black School Educators, and her beloved sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. Dr. Levels earned an EdD in Educational Leadership from Texas A&M Commerce. She earned her Bachelor of Science and Master of Education with a focus on educational administration from the University of North Texas and completed the Superintendent Certification Program with the University of Houston, Victoria. She's most proud of her two children, Leah and Lofton, his wife, Kaylee, and granddaughter, London. Dr. Lovell's favorite quote is, "Great leaders don't set out to be a leader. They set out to make a difference." It's never about a role. It's about the goal. Welcome to the podcast, Lovato.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Well, you know, I've had, you know, vast experiences. And so what I think I could probably share with listeners and viewers now would be a time when the school district had to make some serious financial decisions around positions. And it was a very trying time, because when you're having to have budget cuts and staffing decisions, it was a very trying time. And I thought that we did a great job in that we allowed input from all stakeholders, from parents, from students, from staff members. And we really took the time to do an in-depth our current programs to make decisions on what was best serving our students and what was best serving our teachers and what type of supports did they need. And so ultimately, when we presented our budget reallocations for the next year, the parents were excited because they knew that we listened to them and we made decisions based upon their input, as well as our teachers. And we realigned some of the budget items so that we could provide more instruction. And so, and then there were some positions that were eliminated. But I think when we made that decision, everyone, we were so transparent about in the process, we had the feedback. And so while it was something in the trenches, we had to all just kind of decide, we knew it had to be done if we want to move forward. And so, but I'm very proud of how that process, how the process went and the eventual outcomes.
Yeah, and that's something as a school leader, a district leader, there's always going to be a little bit of, you know, shifting around with positions and FTE with budgets and, you know, making sure that you have stakeholder voice and trying to honor that as much as possible. Sounds like that was your top priority, is making sure that people's voices were heard. Let's talk a little bit about your company. So you're very involved in different organizations, but mm-hmm. you are the CEO of Higher Levels Educational Group. So tell me a little bit about that. And you also have the Power of Kingdom mindset when it it comes to helping leaders of faith, kind of embedded into what you do in your organization.
Correct. Let's talk about Higher Levels Educational Group. I actually started the company in 2006. And so my first contract was with the Texas Education Agency. So I was hired to mentor principals across the state of Texas to provide them mentoring, leadership development, a lot of reflective practicing, modeling, and providing executive mentoring and coaching. And so I worked with the Texas Education Agency for about 8 years. Providing support to about 100 principals, assistant principals and administrators across the state of Texas. And then from there, I continued it individually on my own. And today, probably work again hundreds across the state of Texas and across the country. So my wheelhouse for educational mentoring and professional development, I work with several school districts in providing training on anything from scheduling. I work with secondary schools, middle schools, and high schools on scheduling. I work with, at the district level, providing leadership training, work with cabinet level training, superintendent training. I've done executive mentoring with several superintendents. And a lot of times, executive mentoring, I do not see myself as anyone above or anyone with more experience than anyone. We all can learn from each other. And so as an executive mentor, it is my role and my role to ensure that I provide you with additional thoughts and additional ideas and guidance and counseling. And so, and again, really applying reflective practicing in there, allowing input. And understanding that we all bring something to the table. And so I'm a thought partner with me. And so I'm very proud of my mentees that I've had through the years. A lot of them are current sitting superintendents in Texas, and one is out of state. Two are out of state superintendents, but educators. So I've worked with several city council members, a few school board members. Persons in their own business field in their own or self-employed persons. So executive mentoring that I provide is not limited to education. And again, the professional development, it runs the gamut. I have a team that is very skilled and knowledgeable in a variety of areas from special education. We work with charter school applications. We work with charter schools in implementing improvement plans. That's another major area here in Texas, is that we have a number of schools and school districts that have been placed on improvement areas. And so that's an area that I have provided support. We really try to, it's a unique plan that we develop when we are interviewing persons that are seeking support and professional development. So we tailor make a professional development plan and support consulting for those. So you mentioned I co-authored a book, The Power of the Kingdom Mindset, and I'm so glad that you mentioned that. Thank you. We actually wrote that book a couple years ago, and it is still available. And someone just emailed me a few months ago telling me that they had just read it. And what it is a compilation of narratives of several authors, and we're sharing several different areas of kingdom mindsets. My mindset is around discipline. And so my area in which I write about is a narrative around when I was an elementary principal and how discipline was important for me. And I share a couple of personal stories there and how focus and discipline was important. And at the time when I was going through the situations, didn't see it, didn't understand it. But, you know, in hindsight, I was able to see how discipline allowed me to ultimately be successful in those situations. And so Kingdom Mindset is a great supporting document. It's great for motivation. It's great for inspiration. If you are a teacher or a non-educator, an administrator, there are several different chapters there that allow you to read and glean, and you can see yourself in a lot of those stories. I'm sure we all have stories that we could share, and that's why it's such a good support, and that we're all human and that we learn from each other. And so the Power of a Kingdom Mindset really shares with you how we overcome obstacles and how we apply certain principles in our lives in order for us to be successful. And it can be successful as a mom, as a wife, as an educator, as a community member, as an aunt. I think there's a story in there by one of the young ladies who talks that her role as an aunt and how she supported her sister and her sister's children, her niece and nephew. And so I think it's important that we take out that time to self-care. And in self-care, that can be, you know, taking that time to read something that's inspiring, that's motivating, and also confirming that you're making some good decisions, that you're right on track, and that it's okay to take the time off. It's okay to take care of yourself. It's okay to go to the spa, get the manis and the pedis, and do the things that you need to do so that, because when you are a better you, you can then serve others better. So that is a great support piece to have in your life, definitely. And it's called The Power of a Kingdom Mindset. And my author name is L. Dean, E-L-L-E-D-E-A-N. If you go on Amazon, you can Google, you can put my name in there, E-L-L-E, Dean, D-E-A-N, and you'll come up with The Power of a Kingdom Mindset.
Okay. Sounds great. I'll make sure I link that in the show notes. So I was interested in talking a little bit about your move from being a superintendent to working with college students. You talked to me a little bit about how a lot of what you do is the same as running a school or a district, but now it's, you know, it does look quite different because you're at the university level. So tell me about some of the similarities and some of the differences.
Right. I'm working with people in general. There are certain universal principles that transfer in no matter the role and no matter the title. And so one thing that I've learned, that's why that quote is so important to me, is because it's always about the impact that you can have on a person. It's not about the role. It's always about the goal. And the goal is make sure that we're positively impacting the people we're working with, be it students, be it teachers, be it parents or community members. So as an educator and an administrator, I had the role again, impacting students, improving their academic outcomes, ensuring that parents were involved, ensuring that students understood their opportunities available for them. And so in this role as a student conduct officer, I have the same opportunities. And so a conduct officer, we receive complaints, concerns, receive inquiries, we're constantly collaborating across the college and the university. Primarily, we work with the code of conduct. If there are any types of violations that a student has violated, a student code of conduct, from plagiarism, academic dishonesty, unprofessionalism, there's an ethical integrity issue. And of course, the disciplinary side too, from alcohol, you know, being in possession or under the influence of drugs, alcohol, or any type of physical altercations or assaults or fighting or anything like that. And those things are just as relevant as they are in a K-12 environment as they are here in a higher ed environment. And so my role is to assist and become an advocate for the student to ensure that they understand their rights and their responsibilities. And when there is a situation, we want to ensure that we are collaborating with them, not just delivering decisions, but making sure that they comprehend what has occurred and that they participate in the decision-making regarding if it's going to be any type of probationary status, if it's a warning, but also one of the key points for me in this role is to ensure that we maintain positive relationships and rebuilding. And so if a relationship has been torn between a student and instructor or an employee and a staff member, whomever is involved, and we also hear issues regarding faculty and staff and employees in the university. And so it's always important that I take the time to rebuild that relationship, because we have to continue, because the student needs to continue to graduate with their degree. That's their purpose here. And our purpose is to ensure that we're serving our students and our faculty and our community. And so we want to make sure that we have the opportunity to rebuild the relationships.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Yeah. And even though it's at a, a bigger level in terms of, you know, with the students, they're older and, you know, but you're doing it both, you know, kind of that same, the same skills, like as a principal, because you'll work with employee issues, you'll work with issues with students, student to student, student to teacher, those types of things.
It's the same universal principles.
Yes.
And we have students from, because we have the early college and the dual credit programs from the high schools. So we have students from 16 all the way up to 80 years old.
Okay.
So the same universal principles.
So I talked in the bio a little bit about your work with the Elections Advisory Committee. You're currently the precinct chair. Talk to me about how you got involved with that and kind of what your work is in getting voters registered in the Dallas area.
Oh, wow. That's my passion. I mean, I can talk about this all day. I mean, besides, you know, education, you know, I'm very much passionate about community involvement and engagement. I am involved in the sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. And we're based upon sisterhood, scholarship, and social action. Those are 4 points that we ensure that we are doing on a regular basis. When we are looking at our work, our actions, our behaviors, our activities, we ensure that they are focusing in those areas. And because of that, I'm almost a 40-year member of the sorority. And so I've worked in a variety of committees and elected positions throughout these 40 years. But more recently, in the last 10 years, I've become very involved with voter registration and voter engagement. In the first few years, because I was still working in the K-12 environment, I really focused on high school student voter registration. And at the height of our voter registration in our community, we registered about 500 high school students. And so from that success, I then began working more in the community, out in the community, in those underserved areas. I am a product of Oak Cliff. I'm an Oak Cliff girl. That is an urban neighborhood here in Dallas, Texas. And because I am an Oak Cliff girl, I went back to my roots to Oak Cliff, where my mom lives, to make sure that we were registering voters and making sure that we were getting those voters engaged, that they understood what was on the ballot. They understood how to get engaged. They understood the platforms. They understood the policies. And so that's when I really became active in the Oak Cliff area, in the South Dallas area, about 10 years ago. So I've continued that. And because of that work, I became active with the Democratic Party, became a precinct chair, and then was, one of my roles in the K-12 environment for about 15 years, I was the representative. I conducted the school board elections. So I was the board elections officers for the school district. And so did that for about 15 years and was very connected to the elections administration here in Dallas County. And because of that, our county commissioner appointed me once I retired and I could work on the other side. I could work in that capacity without having a conflict of interest as a member of the advisory committee, because once I was no longer with the K-12 school district, I became an election judge, because I understood, because I was conducting elections, I understood what was needed at those election sites, at the voter sites, at the vote centers. And so once I became an election judge for several years, the commissioner contacted me and asked me to please work on the advisory committee so that I could give some input on some decisions made, since some decisions that were being made. Most recently, we looked at decreasing the number of voting centers throughout Dallas County. And I just saying that just hurts my heart. I mean, because in my mind, we don't ever want to reduce voting centers.
Yeah.
We want to always increase. We want all the opportunities for our residents and our citizens to participate, you know, in exercising their rights to vote. And so, but understanding budget cuts and what needed to be done, we were able to ultimately close. We closed a few centers, but in my area, my district 3, we did not close not one, because I was adamant we were not going to do that. And I could not, in good faith, allow that to happen to the citizens in District 3. And so while it was an arduous process, ultimately we were successful in maintaining the number of voting centers in District 3. So I'm very passionate, again, about voter engagement, voter participation, and voter registration. And so I continue to be in a season And I work with a variety of organizations around that area. And even with the college, I do the same with voter registration and engagement. We're hosting several events. We have several events approaching in the next few weeks, bringing together aligned organizations. You know, those organizations with common goals, and they may have different groups. They may look different, but the goal, we have the common goal of ensuring that we have registration and engagement throughout Dallas County. And so several organizations are going to be partnering and collaborating throughout the college, providing voter registration and a lot of engagement. So I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people know Dallas to be the blue in the middle of a red sea. You know, making sure people get registered, I know, is important, but there also is probably a little bit of pushback to getting voters registered in, you know, a metropolitan area that is in a blue state. You know, how do you see that kind of shifting in the next couple of years? Is there like more pushback, or might it be easier to get people registered?
There's still pushback. There's always pushback, but we've been very successful here in Dallas County to move toward a blue county. And even more exciting is that Fort Worth, which is Tarrant County, is now a purple county. So there's a high probability we could really get Fort Worth to become a blue county with more engagement and more registration, but also participation. We need people to show up on election day. Actually, we need people to show up during early voting. We find that those that are successful and that they are elected to their positions, they win in early voting. And so we really have a lot of efforts toward getting citizens to not just register, but also to show up and vote and participate during early voting. And so, again, we've had some success in Dallas. Most of the leadership here in Dallas County are Democratic leaders, but that doesn't mean that we are not collaborating with all citizens. It's important that everyone has a vote, a voice here in Dallas. And so we continue to work and collaborate. And we go back and forth across the line, you know, assisting one another in key areas when it comes to public schools, when it comes to budgets, when it comes to crime. So there are some common themes between amongst all of the groups here. And so we seem to work well in those areas.
You all do mail-in ballots in Texas?
Yes, very limited, very limited. In fact, our elections administrator was in Colorado for a while. We have a new elections administrator. He's been here 2 years now. And so he brought, he is really attempting to implement some best practices that he's worked previously in Colorado, California, and Florida. And so he has, you know, many years of successful experience. And so we are attempting to implement some things here in Dallas County, but we know that ultimately, in order for those things to be distributed across the state, it has to be done at the state level. And that's when Texas is very red. And so we've had several recent legislation that has really limited voting opportunities, from reducing the days, from reducing the times, again, decreasing locations, the amount of centers, mm-hmm. Also the ID requirements, and then also modifying the requirements for the eligibility requirements for mail-in ballots. And so you have mail-in ballots and you have drive-up mail-in curbside voting as well. But the eligibility requirements are being challenged. Who can do that? You know, previously it wasn't just over 65 or disabled or out of the country, or if you're not in your city, if you had a medical illness, then you could apply for a mail-in ballot. And now those things are being questioned and possibly recommending for changes. And so we know that during this next biennium, our state legislators will be reviewing some proposed legislation about increasing the challenges and the obstacles for mail-in voting and curbside voting. It continues here.
Yeah, and it's strange for somebody from Colorado.
Right. Well, and those are not, again, he's Dallas County. And so he's making recommendations to our state representatives and our senators, but they, when it gets to the state level, for the actual voting, unfortunately, we do not have the support for a lot of those things. And so we have to work across the aisle to for those allies that we can collaborate with to ensure that some of the things that we are, that we believe are important and prioritizing those needs, that we try to work with allies. And so we've been a little successful with that, but excited about some new opportunities in the next legislative biennium.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast and hearing much about your work and your book and all the community work that you do and you know, your role at the university. Out of everything we talked about today, what's one thing you'd like listeners to
remember? Well, remember, first of all, that I am a lifelong educator, and my passion, number one, is always going to be education. And number two, community and public service. I'm from a family of educators. My sister was just recognized this week by the school board by having the top pre-K scores in the state, I believe it was. Education is a family business for us. My daughter's an AP math teacher in Florida. So my mother was my kindergarten teacher. So my dad was an instructor. So I come from a family of educators. And so that's going to always be number one, is my passion. So therefore I utilize my skills and knowledge, which is executive mentoring. And so through Higher Levels Educational Group, I'm available. I work with, again, school districts, individuals, and that I can be contacted through the website. And I think you have that information that we'll share shortly. But that's the one thing I want them to understand, is that number one, it's always going to be about education first. And then again, public service to my community.
Where can people find you online and connect with you on social media?
Sure. HigherLevelsEducationalGroup.com is the website. There is a link there that you can fill out, and it says that you're interested and you want to know more information. It'll come directly to me. My email is alllevels@yahoo.com. That's ALLLEVELS, alllevels@yahoo.com. Additionally, I'm on, and it's the same with Twitter, and the same with Higher Levels Education Group on Facebook.
Great. I'll make sure to include those all in the show notes. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. And thank you so much for sharing about your work and what you do to make a difference in the community.
Thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it.
Are you excited that in-person conferences are back? I know I am. In fact, I'm excited to announce that I will be at the 2022 Teach Better Conference this October 14th and 15th in Akron, Ohio. I'll be recording episodes live, attending sessions, and connecting with a whole bunch of amazing educators. It would be awesome if you could join us. Head over to www.teachbetterconference.com/register and use the code OUTOFTHETRENCHES to save $50 off your 2-day registration. I hope to see you next month. Your affiliate code again is Out of the Trenches, lowercase, no space.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.